God bless you, and welcome to Spirit and Truth Fellowship International's audio podcast. Our goal is to provide you with Bible-based teachings that will help you walk in a transforming relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. We hope you will be inspired by what you're about to hear.
Please take your Bible and turn to Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17. Where we're going to find the theme or title for this teaching. In Proverbs 27:17, the Word of God says, "As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Iron sharpening iron. What exactly does that mean? I believe iron sharpening iron speaks of a paradigm of confrontation. And in this teaching, I'd like to take the time to look at what I call the art of godly confrontation, because I believe that confrontation is a relational skill that we must learn if, in fact, we're going to have godly relationships and develop godly communities. Now, let's all face it. Conflict is an ever-present part of life. I think of myself, and almost on an hourly basis, I'm confronted with something. Many times I receive emails where someone wants to confront, and I use that word loosely here, on maybe something that I've said in a teaching or possibly something I've written in an article. Also, there's times just within the workplace where we as employees, we're confronting one another, we're challenging one another with ideas or things that we say. The fact is that conflict is a part of my life, and I'm sure it's part of your life. If you take a minute and think about it, are there situations in your life right now that are producing some conflict which maybe you've been avoiding? Some things that you really should confront, but for whatever reason you're not? In Matthew chapter 5, verse 9, Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God." I believe that this verse in Matthew 5:9 really sets the proper tone for what godly confrontation is all about. Godly confrontation is when we confront one another with the intent of resolving conflict. Sadly, a lot of times what we've seen is confrontation actually escalating conflict rather than resolving it. The reason I chose Proverbs 27:17 is because I believe there's a pattern or a paradigm spoken of when iron sharpens iron. It's a deliberate process. It's an intentional rubbing of one piece of steel against another with the intent to produce a better state for both of those pieces of steel. You want to rub them so that it results in the steel being sharpened. It's not banging two pieces of steel against another. Sadly, what I've seen some people do is actually quote this verse in Proverbs 27:17, and they use it as an excuse to abuse another person. It says iron sharpening iron. It doesn't say iron banging against iron or iron clanging or smashing against iron. If I did that, took a piece of steel and did that with a sword or a knife, all I'd end up doing would be dulling it. When we talk of godly confrontation, it's a state where what we're actually doing is we're being very intentional and deliberate to produce a redemptive state, to bring about a greater possibility. The conflict already exists. What our desire is to now bring that conflict to some state of resolution, to bring peace to the situation. Godly confrontation is always about fighting for the better, for the greater good. Godly confrontation is the mechanism that we use to open the door to resolving the conflict, to getting ourselves back on the right track with the other person, to correcting error in our lives. And it always has the potential of bringing about resolution. Peace. That's what iron sharpening iron, or that's what godly confrontation is all about. Now, the fact of the matter is, we've all got problems. We've all got blind spots. You know, none of us is without sin, and all of us need some form of godly confrontation if we're going to grow. In Psalm 51:10, David said, "Create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me." So how exactly is God supposed to give David this pure heart? Remember, this is David's prayer. It's not as if David had a pure heart. Well, if David's experience is like mine, when I've prayed to be patient, I have generally found that all of a sudden I'm in situations where it's brought to my attention, "Dan, you've prayed for patience, and here you're not being patient." It's almost as if God helps me by increasing my spiritual sensitivity by putting me, first of all, in situations or bringing to my mind when I'm in situations where I need to have what I've prayed for. It's not as if God took a pure heart and then just gave David a heart transplant. No, God confronted David in those situations in which David is not exercising a pure heart. Confrontation, godly confrontation, is the mechanism that God uses to bring about the growth, to help resolve conflict in our lives. Remember the prophet Nathan, when he comes to David, he confronts David about the situation with Uriah and Bathsheba. Confrontation is something that must happen if we're to develop a pure heart and if we are to grow as David wanted to grow. Friction is what polishes a gemstone. And in the same way, iron sharpening iron is the friction that we need if we are to polish the rough bumps and edges off of our lives. When done improperly, confrontation can be devastating. It can be downright hurtful and wounding. But when done right, it resolves conflict, it brings about peace, and it produces redemptive growth. In this teaching, I've broken it down into four parts. In part one, I want to take some time to kind of develop a basic understanding of confrontation, some background, if you would. Then in part two, I want to look at and demonstrate how confrontation is that mechanism, as I said, to resolve conflict, to produce godly relationships. And we're going to look at some examples of that from the Word of God. Then in part three, I want to look at some keys that we can employ if we are going to learn how to do godly confrontation. And then in part four, we'll take some time to answer some frequently asked questions. So now, part one, a better understanding of the topic of confrontation. I think for many people, the minute you mention that you're going to have to confront something, or you even begin to talk about the topic of confrontation, a negative image comes to mind. Most of us, as I said earlier, have experienced some form of ungodly, unhealthy, hurtful confrontation. But the fact is, the word confront actually just means to stand face to face in full view. I like to use the Webster's 1828 dictionary because it goes back to the older, more original meanings of words. And there, that's exactly what Webster says, to stand face to face in full view. It's to bring something to another person's attention. It's to present it to their face so that they can look at it. So here's the problem. Few of us have really ever seen confrontation properly done. I know with myself, I grew up in a family where there was confrontation, but at times my dad seemed to be way over on the anger area. There's other times, though, that we as a family would just avoid certain subjects. After all, the idea was, if you don't talk about it, then it's not really a problem. But you know as well as I do, denying a problem doesn't remove the problem. In fact, just the opposite. If we have a problem or conflict, when you bury it, it poisons the soil. It poisons relationship soil. You cannot bury conflict. Now, many times there are things that there could be something that you don't like, and we can exercise the proper discipline of just overlooking the thing. But if it keeps coming back, then you're not overlooking it. Then what you have is actually something that has to be confronted. When it comes to the topic of confrontation, I've experienced within myself, and most people that I'm in relationship tend to flow between two extremes. The one is, as I mentioned, where people avoid conflict, and the other is where they're too assertive, too aggressive. These seem to be the two extremes. What we want to do is be right in the middle, in the balance. When we avoid direct confrontation, what it does is it sets us up to tend to be, we go into gossiping. We go into whispering, backbiting. It actually can set us up and produce within us ungodly attitudes. You tend to go to others when rather than confronting the person that you actually need to. It also produces what I call passive-aggressive behaviors. They're behaviors which are intentionally aggressive, but yet you're not presenting it to the face of the other person. You're doing it in a way which is sabotaging the relationship. A passive-aggressive behavior is when you want to say no or you don't want to do something, but rather than being honest about it, you just ignore it, and then you don't show up. That's one form of a passive-aggressive behavior. There's many others. And passive-aggressive behavior tends to be more frequent in people who have a tendency to avoid conflict. The conflict's there. You're just not being direct about it. Another thing that we tend to do if you're a person who avoids conflict is that when you do express the conflict, you tend to go overboard. It's as if you've bottled it up and you've suppressed it. So then when you do act, your actions are out of proportion to the situation. I know I've done this where I've just suppressed and pushed things down and held them in, and then a friend of mine does something very small and I almost explode on him. That's not what we want either. On the opposite end of the confrontation continuum, if you would, is an over-assertiveness. It's an aggressiveness. In those situations, those are people that tend to be too quick to pull the trigger, so to speak. Generally, too quick to speak up and slow to listen. We want the opposite. We want to be quick to listen and slow to speak. If you tend to be in those situations where you're overly assertive, what you actually are doing is you're escalating the conflict. You're inflaming the situation. In those times, we tend to be more argumentative, and we're actually promoting strife and producing contention. Just consider for a minute what God says in Proverbs chapter 12, verse 18. Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. See, we don't want to be reckless with our words. We don't want to just be quick to pull the trigger. And as God says, pierce others like a sword. But we want to have tongues that bring healing. In Proverbs 15, verse 4, it says, the tongue that brings healing is a tree of life, but a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. A deceitful tongue is a tongue that speaks falsely. Whether you intend to speak falsely or not, if you're not speaking the truth, you're speaking falsely. In godly confrontation, we want to be those types of people that speak the truth and do it in love. Both tendencies to be avoidant or to be overly assertive, I believe, are based in fear and pride. Whenever we tend to those extremes, then it sets us up for abusiveness, manipulation, control, contempt, and actually it has a lack of courage in it. A lack of courage, especially if you're avoiding the conflict, because you're running from the situation. And also a lack of courage sometimes when you're too assertive, because you need to be open to the possibility that you're wrong in this situation. And that takes courage to be able to face your own stuff. In Proverbs 18, verse 19, it says, an offended brother is more unyielding than a fortified city, and disputes are like the barred gates of a citadel. I've experienced that. where I've been too quick to jump into a situation, too quick to speak what's on my mind. Actually, I've offended people, and those relationships sadly seem to be irreparably damaged. That's not what we want to do. When done properly, confrontation is not a negative thing. Godly confrontation is a good thing, and it produces a tree of life. Proverbs 15, verse 31 says, "He who listens to a life-giving rebuke will it be at home among the wise." We want our confrontation, our iron sharpening iron, to be life-giving rebukes. Now, when I say rebuke, so many times that people have just been too quick to just reprove and rebuke. Actually, it can be very entreating, something that can be very gentle. And I know that there's been situations in my life where someone who's been very godly and very loving comes and speaks to me in a way that they're actually confronting me on a situation, doing it in a way which I get their love, and it is actually producing greater sense of life in me. It's a redemptive thing. So when we say a life-giving rebuke, this does not have to be harsh. Proverbs 15:23 actually says, "A man finds joy in giving an apt reply, and how good is a timely word." I believe that's what godly confrontation is. It's an apt reply, a reply that is fitting. It's a word that is timely and it's spoken properly. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 2, it says, "Preach the word. Be prepared in season and out of season. Correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and careful instruction." My sense is that correcting, rebuking, and encouraging are all forms of confrontation, and they can all be done in a godly manner. This is an essential relationship skill that we have got to learn if we are going to have godly relationships and develop a godly community. Well, welcome to part two of this teaching. And in this section, what I want to talk about is how confrontation is that mechanism that we need to use to open the door to resolving conflict. As I said earlier, conflict is an ever-present reality within relationships. You know, we can pretend it's not there, but the fact is, it's often there and we're just avoiding it. I'd like to give you an example of a situation, and I have the permission of both John Shainhite and Ryan Mayer, my co-workers here. A couple weeks ago, we were down having lunch at a restaurant, and as we were walking in, we were having a very spirited conversation, or at least it was spirited between John and Ryan, and they were having a difference of opinion on a certain topic. Now, I found myself getting a little uptight with the fact that they were not just disagreeing, but they were strongly disagreeing. I felt a tension. So as we got into the, it happened to be a Chinese buffet, and we got in there, I found myself just walked up and paid for my own lunch and left those two as they're standing there kind of hashing it out. Well, they all went through the line. They come, and we sit down at the table. And after a few minutes of silence, and we're sitting there, certainly blessed our food, but you know, it just wasn't a free-flowing conversation that was going. I felt conflict. So what did I do about it? Well, I spoke up and I said, "Guys, I might be completely wrong here, but I'm feeling some tension in the air. Do we need to kind of make amends here or anything?" Well, at which point John looks up and says, no, I'm okay. And Ryan the same. Now, the fact of the matter is, I do believe them and I take them at their word. They were fine. But I wasn't fine. I confronted the situation because what I was concerned about is I want godly relationships and I don't want to walk away from this, you know, where if I'm in conflict, then I want to resolve that. I want to be a peacemaker, a peacekeeper. And so I brought the situation to light. When I say conflict is an ever-present reality, I'm not talking about, you know, people going to battle with one another or always having major, massive fights. we have a tension that exists between many of us because we have conflicting ideas, conflicting ways of going about of doing things, ways in which we see things and different perspectives. Conflict is something that we need to understand, we have to recognize it, and when proper, we need to be able to confront it with the proper means. I love my wife, Lori, and she's become an expert at confronting me. There's a time in my life when I would tend to embellish. I would tend to exaggerate in stories. I believe that one of my giftings is as an encourager. And as an encourager, I've seen it present with other people that have this gift. We tend to just kind of, you know, make the story a little bit bigger. It's not an intentional desire to deceive, but it's almost like we're promoters. Well, Lori continued to confront me about that. She'd say, "You know, honey, I kind of got the sense you were embellishing that situation." As a result of her loving and consistent confrontation where she would bring it to my attention, I learned and I've grown. And I can honestly say I actually have a tendency not to embellish anymore. I also had a situation where a friend of mine, you know, would become very upset because we'd get into a conversation and I would tend to cut him off. I'm a verbal person. I'm very much a, you know, I speak quickly. I tend to jump in conversations. But I also came from a family of seven brothers and sisters. And when we sat at the dinner table, if you didn't speak up, you weren't going to get a word in even edgewise. So with my friend, he grew up in an entirely different family situation. And in their household, one person spoke at a time, and they were very respectful because that's the way that their father, you know, conducted the dinner table. It was a very disciplined manner of speaking. I'm on the exact opposite end. So my friend would get just very mad at me. And what I finally did is, because I didn't understand, why is he getting so mad? And it wasn't serving me. His anger was actually causing me to get angry at him. So one day I just asked him, I said, "When you find that I'm cutting you off, if you're taking a breath or a long pause, that's a cue to me, the way I grew up, is that you're done. But I'm understanding that you're really not done. So now do me a favor and just hold your hand up. Kind of like a stop sign. It's a signal to me, a physical signal saying, I'm not done." Well, you know, his confrontation style was anger. I went to him and I confronted him about what he was doing to me. And as the two of us worked it out, next thing he began to employ that. And we ended up in a lot better situation. My point is that confrontation is the mechanism that we can use to open the door to resolve conflict. And the Bible is filled with examples of confrontation. I mean, just think, I've already mentioned Nathan confronting David. But how about, you know, the patriarch Joseph when he confronted his brothers in Egypt? You know, there's a whole long story about the confrontation that goes on there. God also confronted Moses. And there's a dialogue that goes back and forth when Moses is called with the burning bush. Then Moses actually had to go and confront Pharaoh. We've also got examples of like King Saul. I was reflecting back on Saul as I was driving to work today and how it said that Saul was a very fearful man. When he was first anointed, they found him among the baggage. And then you see this fear playing out in Saul's life. I believe that Saul was actually very conflict avoidant, and it set him up for future problems. There's a situation where he's given instructions by the prophet Samuel to go and to kill all of the Amalekites. And then he doesn't do it. And why? Because he says, the people. See, Saul wasn't strong enough within himself. He didn't have enough steel within his own spine to stand up and confront the people. He yielded to it. And this is one of the dangers. If we don't learn the art of godly confrontation, you will actually confine yourself in situations where you're doing something that you really don't want to do. Also, there's records in the Word of God where David was actually a very permissive father. And the problem was that he wasn't confronting the sin of his children. Let's go to Acts chapter 6, because I want to look also, I've given you some examples of confrontation, but just think of these as you're reading the word and going through and look at the various examples of confrontation and how it's all played out. And it's not all hellfire and brimstone. There's many times where it's just that fit, that word fitly spoken that produces, you know, kind of a pricking of the heart that brings something about. In Acts chapter 6, we have a situation where the Grecian Jews actually had to confront the situation. In Acts 6, 1, it says, "In those days when the number of disciples was increasing, the Grecian Jews among them complained against the Hebraic Jews." Why'd they complain? Because, it says, their widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. They confronted the situation. There's conflict going on. And so they brought it to the attention. And what's the result? The result, as you read on, is that the apostles, actually the whole church grew, because they actually instituted a level of eldership here. And they sought out seven men amongst the people who are of good reputation. And then it produced increased leadership, and it took pressure off the apostles, and it improved the situation. In Acts chapter 15, verse 1, there's another situation where we see some conflict and there's a confrontation that happens. In Acts 15, 1, it says, "Some men came down from Judea to Antioch and were teaching the brothers, 'Unless you are circumcised according to the custom taught by Moses, you cannot be saved.' This brought Paul and Barnabas into sharp dispute and debate with them." Help! There's serious conflict in this church. So what is the result? It goes on and says, "So Paul and Barnabas were appointed, along with some other believers, to go up to Jerusalem to see the apostles and elders about this question." Here again, confrontation, and done in a godly way, produced growth within the church, and it actually resulted in a serious theological issue being resolved. We also have in Galatians chapter 2, verse 11 and 12, where it says in verse 12, "Before certain men came from James, he," talking of Peter, "used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group." I believe Peter was actually afraid to confront these people. See, so there's conflict avoidance. So then what happens? Paul says, "When Peter came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face." That's a confront, face to face, because he was clearly in the wrong. If that situation had not been confronted, it would have resulted in a very ungodly situation, and the Gentiles, the converted Gentiles, would have been harmed. Paul, in a godly way, confronts Peter. And, you know, this is the point I'm trying to make is, you know, this confrontation and godly confrontation is all over the Bible. So if we want to be like David and have a pure heart, we, like Paul, like Peter, like Barnabas, like all of these men, we need to learn how to confront, but do it in a loving, kind, and in an entreating manner. I think of how Jesus confronted. Remember the situation where he confronts Peter and he says, "Get behind me, Satan." I don't think Jesus turned in a harsh way and just dressed Peter down. He just called the situation for what it was. Or how about the time when Jesus confronts the rich young ruler? Because here the rich young ruler is talking about all the things he did, and then Jesus just basically confronted the idol in that young man's heart. He says, "Go sell all your possessions and then give to the poor, and then follow me." And the guy walks away sad, but Jesus was confronting an idol. He also confronted Pharisees, and there are times where he was very stern and very direct, but it's because of their sinfulness and their hard-heartedness. And then we have the classic confrontation between Jesus and Peter in John chapter 21, the record where Jesus asked Peter three times, "Do you love me?" And he tells Peter, "Feed my sheep." What Jesus was doing is he was fighting for Peter's heart, and he was trying to get Peter to just step up the game. And it wasn't about friendship. It was about him doing what Jesus knew he was going to need to do. We need to have steel in our backbones, but love in our hearts. And when we can learn how to properly confront one another in love, in an entreating way, then we truly can be iron sharpening iron for one another. I'd like to take some time now in part three and look at some practical keys that I've written down on how to confront and how to do it in a healthy way. Now, certainly these are not all the keys. These are some that I've written down. And if you have more, please email them to me or call me and send them to me, because this is something I'm seriously pursuing. I want to develop the art of godly confrontation. And I'm sure that you want to be a person of iron who can sharpen others. In Proverbs 25, 11, and 12, I already said, a word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. It's like an earring of gold or an ornament of fine gold is a wise man's rebuke to a listening ear. That's what godly confrontation is. It's a word aptly spoken, and it's something that is fine, like an earring of gold or an ornament of fine gold. That's what a wise man's rebuke is like to a listening ear. So here's some keys which I have written down and I have found to be very useful for myself. Number one, recognize that many times confrontation means that you're going to have a difficult conversation. The easy thing is to tuck your tail between your legs and say nothing. But as I've said, all that generally does is causes things to fester, and eventually you're going to explode in a way in which most of us don't want to be. We want to be pure-hearted people. So if we're going to do that, number one, take some time and prepare properly. Now, I'm not talking about like myself at the lunch table with John and Ryan. I didn't have to do any proper preparation. I just spoke up and said, guys, I may be wrong here, but, and then I aired the conflict. And it turned out that, frankly, after I said that, there was almost like joy that was in the air, and there was a sense of increased fervency in our conversation. In Proverbs 14, verse 15, it says, a simple man believes anything, but a prudent man gives thought to his steps. That's the proper preparation. The more difficult conversation that you're going to have, the more you need to properly prepare. In Proverbs 22, verse 3, it says, a prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. If you're going to have a difficult conversation, then do yourself a favor and do the other person the favor of preparing properly. Number one, pray about the situation. Seek God's help and guidance. You know, maybe this is a situation which is all you and not, it has nothing to do with the other person. And many times God will reveal that to you. Also, look for God's help to discern the situation. Many times what we see on the surface is really not what the root of the problem is. And for us to discover that takes discernment. God has wisdom. He can reveal it to us. But we need to do the steps of praying for that and seeking His wisdom. A third part of proper preparation is be clear on what you want to accomplish. I know there's been lots of situations where I'm unhappy with something. And, you know, I just want to talk about how I'm unhappy with it. Well, that's not necessarily the best. You know, what is it that I hope to accomplish? What am I trying to resolve? And thinking that through, being clear on the situation, goes a long ways to producing a proper solution to the situation. Make sure that you've cleared the beam in your own eye before you go around about start talking about the speck in your brother's eye. The second thing that we can do is make sure that we have proper speech. The first one was proper preparation. Now, when you're going to speak, use proper speech, godly speech. That's, again, a word aptly spoken. I like to put the emphasis there on the fact that it's a word. Select your words properly. There was a book I read a while back, and it talked about the ABCs of speech, of Christian speech. Make sure it's accurate, it's biblical, and it's considerate. Now, what do I mean when I say accurate, biblical, and considerate? Accurate meaning the words you're speaking properly describe the situation. You know, you don't need to embellish. We don't need to exaggerate. Just speak accurately. Biblical, meaning that we're talking, that we're anchoring it in the truth, that we're not, again, going off on our own opinions necessarily, but that we're anchored biblically. And considerate, meaning that we're kind, that we've got mercy and grace in our speech. You know, that there's many times you can say the hardest of things to people if you do it and they get that you really are considerate and you really do love them. Remember in Proverbs 12:18, it says, "Reckless words pierce like a sword." When something pierces like a sword, that means it hurts, and we don't want to be hurtful people. I've used the phrase in past times of keyboard courage. I think this is something that we've all probably seen or experienced, and it's related now to the internet and emails and Facebooks and Twitters and all of the other social things that we're doing. Keyboard courage is when people will sit at their keyboard venting, typing things out in anger, saying things that the fact of the matter is they would never, ever dare say to your face. You know, confrontation face to face. You know, if someone was actually sitting here across the desk from me, I will guarantee you they wouldn't say half the things that we see coming through on emails. So let's make sure that when you're using proper speech, you're not relying on keyboard courage. The next thing is make sure that the words and actions fit the occasion. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 1, it says, "Brothers, if someone's caught in a sin," you know, and that word sin is it's not like a deep-seated sin. It's a paratoma. It's a trespass. You know, just basically speak to them, but watch yourself, or you'll also may be tempted. See, you know, we need to make sure that if someone has a misstep, you know, that's what the paratoma is. It's just a misstep. You know, it's not necessarily an intentional sin. Then we just bring that to their attention, but we watch ourselves too. That's what proper speech is. It's just bringing something to another person's attention. Now, on the other extreme, there may be times where we have to speak with, you know, maybe a little bit more emphasis. In Titus 1:3, it talks about this testimony is true. Therefore, rebuke them sharply so that they will be sound in the faith. On the one hand, you know, we need to be very entreating, but yet on the other extreme, depending upon the situation, we may need to exercise a sharp rebuke. The point that I'm trying to say is the words must fit the occasion. That, you know, how many times I know that myself, I've wimped out when I really need to speak a little bit more forcefully, but I downplay it and I soft pedal it and I talk in too general a terms. And then you know what the end result is? It doesn't produce any godly results. The person who walks away kind of walks away confused going, "Well, I don't know what that was about." And then on the other hand, if it's something that's a minor situation and you speak too harshly, well, then they walk away very hurt because it's like, "Wow, what was that all over?" So we can say too little at times and we're wrong, or we can say too much and too harsh and be wrong. You make sure the words fit the occasion. And then another key is proper timing. In Proverbs 25:11, when it said, "A word aptly spoken," the emphasis here is another translation is fitly spoken. And a fitly spoken means words that are right in their right timing. You know, when I think of right timing, I try to put myself in the other person's shoes. Where are they at? What's going on in their life? Is it really necessary that I confront them about this right now? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But what comes to my mind was a situation where a person called me and I think rightly so needed to confront me about a situation. The problem was when their call came, I was dealing with within just the like 5 to 6 weeks earlier, my daughter had died, my daughter Sheila. And what they were doing is they were bringing to attention something that really was, you know, occurred during this period of time, and they were very insensitive to the situation. The fact of the matter is, I probably really didn't hear much of what they were trying to say because they were completely insensitive to where I was and what was going on in my life. They didn't even really inquire. So as a general rule, don't confront in your anger. Don't confront when you're hungry or hurried or harried or lonely or tired. You know, you just, it's gonna produce a bad result. You're just not gonna speak properly. Many times, I need to walk away from the situation. If I'm angry, calm down a little bit, think it through, do that proper preparation, and then bring it back to them. A fourth key is make sure you have a proper attitude. And the proper attitude, in my opinion, is always humble, always humility. You always have to be open to the possibility that you're wrong. Now, many times, as I said, I use that example of the lunch situation with John and Ryan. The way I opened that is, guys, I may be wrong, but I'm feeling a lot of tension here. Now, the fact is, I was wrong, but I was speaking honestly that I was feeling tension, and I was open to the possibility that I was wrong. Something that I learned recently as I was watching a show on the Discovery Channel is the fact that we all have what's called false memory. I was absolutely stunned when I saw this, and I'm not going to go into all the details of it, but the entire show actually scientifically documented how because of the thousands and thousands of visual and sensory inputs that come into our mind, we cannot focus on everything. It actually produces false memories. And then what happens is rather than those memories becoming weaker in time, they actually grow stronger. So the problem is that, you know, someone, you know, says something and what they say may not be what you are actually hearing. Have you ever been in a situation where You know, a couple days go by and you've got a problem and you say, well, you said, and they go, that's not what I said at all. Yes, you did. I mean, I know I've been accused of it and I've also accused other people of it. The problem that happens is many times because of our perspectives, what's going on in our lives, we actually see and hear and perceive things falsely. But then what goes on is every time I access that memory, rather than the memory just kind of dissipating, it actually builds protein chains and strengthens the neurons of that memory. The memory actually goes stronger. And I know that as I've thought back and reflected on situations, it's almost like I'm more clear on what a person did and I'm more solid in what they did. It's because I'm constructing a memory. But the problem is those memories often are false. The answer to this, as I watched this show one day, is I thought, oh my gosh, that's the answer. I remember when I was with so-and-so and they did this and that's not what happened. And then another situation and that person did that and that's not what I remember at all. But then as I was watching that show, I realized, oh my gosh, if they have false memory, that means I've got false memory. And if I've got false memory, then what's the answer here? How can we even navigate through life? If people that I'm dealing with all the time have false memory and I have a false memory, how do we get at the truth of what actually happened? Well, I believe God has given us, you know, lots of keys to that. But the first one is have humility to the possibility that you're wrong. Because as time goes on, what I've seen is that not only is there the possibility, there's the probability that you're wrong because you're probably not 100% right. Both parties are probably wrong to some degree. I always love that where, you know, people have said, well, you've got two ears and one mouth, so listen twice as much as you speak. You know, that would go a long ways in resolving lots of these problems. You know, we need to make sure that we have that proper attitude. And there's a whole other series on how to resolve these problems because of false memories. And I don't want to make this teaching about that. But in James chapter 1, verse 19 and 20, it says, Be, you know, listen, be slow to speak, slow to become angry, for man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. And in Proverbs 10:19, it says, when words are many, sin is not absent, but he who holds his tongue is wise. You know, a lot of times, you know, it's a matter of just holding the tongue. And then when I say a proper attitude in confrontation, many times I will raise the situation, say, raise the conflict, and then sit back and listen. Let the other person explain themselves. Just be there and let, you know, and by your attitude, demonstrate your humility. And that's the point that I'm trying to make is, you know, if you're both jumping in and your words are many between the two of you, there's probably going to be some sin present. Have some humility. And then another key is, you know, we need to make sure that our motivation is right, proper motivation. And the proper motivation is and only is love. We confront because we love the other person. We have conflict and we're seeking peace. We're seeking restoration. We want to be able to have cooperation and we want unity restored. The purpose of godly confrontation is always to seek to resolve conflict, not to create it. And as I said earlier, Matthew 5:9 is the paradigm. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. I enter into confrontation because I desire that there be peace and that there be restoration and redemption and growth. It's the spiritually mature that generally seek peace first. They're the ones who usually make the first move. They're the ones who desire the way of peace, and they desire reconciliation. James chapter 3, verse 17 and 18 says, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. That is the heart of godly confrontation. Peace-loving, considerate, submissive, mercy, good fruit, impartial, sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace, raising a harvest of righteousness. And now I'd like to turn to part 4 of this teaching, which is common questions and practical issues. The first question that I've received from time to time is, you know, how should you respond when someone confronts you, but you actually think that they're wrong? I always try to encourage everybody to consider what is the motivation of the other person. Hopefully their motivation is that they love you and that they're desiring a better relationship. But we also don't want to be ignorant of the fact that many times people confront and what they're actually trying to do is to manipulate or control you and to try to bring about something that they, for selfish motives, you know, are trying to bring about. Also, I'd like to encourage you to understand that we all have blind spots. You know, I like to say none of us have eyes in the back of our head, so that's why we need friends to bring things to our attention. And seldom is any one person completely right. So again, be humble to consider and honestly evaluate what another person is saying. That doesn't hurt anything. I've actually just within the last few weeks had someone that wrote me and was bringing something to my attention. They were very forceful in their opinion. And I honestly sat back and considered it. And I take that usually to other people. I've received letters, I think of one a couple years ago. And it was a person who was making some accusations. And I took that to my friends and say, do you have any witness of this? You know, you want to be humble and examine yourself. Because after all, we want to be like David and have a pure heart. And if you've, in examining yourself, if you've done something wrong, someone confronts you, then ask for forgiveness. If your actions have hurt another person, whether you intended to hurt them or not, I ask for forgiveness. I don't want to go about hurting people. And many times it's the asking of forgiveness which brings about healing. And another thing that I've learned is many times I just tell people, I'm sorry you feel that way. You know, the fact is, that if I disagree with them, I am sorry that they feel that way. So that can go a long way. And being humble and kind in it can really help. You know, as I mentioned earlier, we all have different perspectives. We all have false memories. You know, just here's some of the dynamics that go on. And think about this, because this produces conflict between people. There's a male-female dynamic. I used to tell my wife, listen, honey, I'm not your girlfriend. I'm a guy. I'm a dude, okay? I'm not your girlfriend. Because there's a dynamic just between male and female that results in different perspectives. Some people are introverted versus the extrovert, so that can create conflict and tension. Some people are timid, other people are bold. You know, some people tend to be more of a front person, whereas others want to be in the back. You know, some want to be in the front of the crowd and up front teaching, and other people want to hold back. And there's nothing that's right or wrong about either, but they just produce different tensions and conflicts. Some of us, like myself, can tend to be loud, whereas others are more soft. We have an aggressive versus a passive. You have the liberal, conservative, refined, unrefined. You have the artistic person versus the conventional. You know, a joker. I like to joke a lot, whereas sometimes that can get on people's nerves that tend to be very serious. Some tend to be very contemplative, whereas other people are very gregarious and outgoing. My point is, I've got a whole list of these, you know, and these all produce conflict. So just be aware of it. You know, if someone presents a problem, just honestly, you know, tell them thank you and consider it, and then go from there. And if you don't agree with them, then go back and continue the dialogue and continue the conversation. Because after all, you may need to confront them then. Question number two, when do you know to confront and when do you not confront? And where do you draw the line on how to know when to pull the plug on a conversation? I think these two questions are all kind of wrapped up in one. Well, first of all, I want to say that there's four basic, qualities or conditions that I think we need to be aware of. And if these are present, these are going to kill a relationship. So when do you confront? Well, if any one of these four are present, I pretty much know that there's going to have to be a confrontation. And then also, when do you draw the line and when do you disengage? Well, at some point, if these things continue to be present, you're going to have to withdraw, because it's just going to be an apocalypse of your relationship. The first one is defensiveness. That's responding to a challenge generally by overreacting. That's what defensiveness is. And if you're defensive, it means the walls are up, that you're really not able to have a serious dialogue and honest conversation. Another of these four horsemen of four horsemen of apocalyptics, you know, in relationship is stonewalling. Whenever you're trying to deal with someone and they're just stonewalling, that's when they're being obstructive or they're just evasive. They won't answer your questions. You're not going to get anywhere. And so at some point, you need to disengage. I remember a conversation I had with a person, and every time I pointed something out, they would just evade it, or they just throw up some kind of what I call chaff. Chaff is like at the back of one of these military aircraft. What they would do is they actually release flares to cause the anti-aircraft missile to blow up, not the plane, but to blow up outside, you know, because of the chaff. It's like throwing up diversions. That's what stonewalling is a lot of times. If there's serious criticism, it's, you know, when it's coming down to a condemnation of a person's character, you know, it seems to be just a consistent criticism, you need to disengage. And another one, and I consider this a serious one, is contempt. I believe there's a proverb that actually says, when wickedness comes, so does contempt. And contempt is when any person is speaking down to another person. They actually are making a statement as if they're on a higher level or a higher plane. They're thinking that the other person is beneath. Contempt, I believe, is one of the most insidious relationship characteristics, that it's always apocalyptic. It's always destructive. You know, many times, if you're not careful, you've got to be, these four horsemen can actually produce physical attacks, character attacks, punitive steps, you know, serious antagonism. There's always a lack of good faith effort. So, you know, when you're dealing with those things, you know, then that's a time when you need to withdraw from the confront, and it's also a time to disengage in the conversation. There's two other factors that I found present, and you want to try and identify these. One of them is we enter into conversations and we generally have what's called a positive sentiment override. That's where you, when, if someone does something that generally might be irritable, you dismiss it. It's like, oh, well, that's just John. That's just the way John is. You know, it's like if someone does something that's kind of, you know, off that day, rather than being seriously judgmental, you just say, oh, well, you know, Dan's just having a crummy day, or he's just in a crummy mood today. But you're basically extending positive sentiments to the person. The other way that people act is what's called a negative sentiment override. And this is, and I'm sure you've experienced, I have, no matter what you do. I mean, you can do you can do some of the kindest things. And if you do, then the people say, oh, well, yeah, but he's just trying to, you know, get so-and-so. It's as if they're actually living in this state of negative sentiment. So I guess this is a long answer to the question, when do you confront and when do you withdraw? Well, be aware, is someone treating you with a negative sentiment override? Are they always viewing you and things you do in a negative way, no matter what you do? Or is there genuinely a real positive sentiment that's present? And also, are you dealing with defensiveness, stonewalling, criticism, and contempt? And then the third question, what happens if you confront a person and the end result is you still disagree? Well, that's what I call a disputable matter. Peace doesn't mean uniformity. Peace means that you can agree to disagree, that maybe you're just going to shelve the situation and you'll have to come back to it to a later date. Maybe both of you need to grow a little bit before you can really address this situation. And that's okay. We can have a difference of opinion and still be in relationship with one another. A fourth question is it best to confront face-to-face? Some people tend to like to write their thoughts down and they want to write letters instead of a face-to-face conversation. Well, what I would encourage you to do is face-to-face. The minute that you do anything less than face-to-face, you're setting yourself up for there to be a problem. The reason is communication is both verbal and visual. And if really the confrontation is done in the spirit of seeking peace, then it's going to require dialogue. It requires an exchange of perspectives. And when you rely on writing, you're relying on only presenting one side. I've been in situations where other people tend to really like to write, and they're good writers. And when they and so they want to present a long letter or whatever to myself, and I almost feel overwhelmed. The last thing I want to do is sit down and write out a 10-page response to that. You know, of course, situations differ. Distances sometimes demand that we write. But I would always encourage face-to-face whenever and wherever possible. When you go off of face-to-face, if you rely on just a verbal as in a phone, then you've eliminated the visual aspect of communication and you've already reduced it to words and tone and just inflection. Now, when you go to just letter writing, all you're doing is relying on words. There's no tone, there's no emphasis placed on words, there's no inflection, there's no visual communication. In other words, the opportunity for miscommunication is extremely high. And I have found that letter writing actually tends to produce more conflict than resolve it. So whenever and wherever possible, always make it a face-to-face. Remember, the purpose of godly confrontation is to resolve conflict, not create it. And we want to make sure that we are people, as Proverbs 27:17 says, iron sharpening iron, so one man sharpens another. If we can learn the art of godly confrontation, then we can help one another as iron sharpening iron.
The teaching you just heard was a presentation of Spirit and Truth Fellowship International. For further study, we encourage you to visit our research website, truthortradition.com. If you would like to get your copy of this teaching on CD or tape, you can go online at our home website, stfonline.org/store, or call us toll-free at 888-255-6189. Again, that's 888-255-6189. God bless you.